Welcome to the ASVML tutorial session 3.2, where we're talking about spatial analysis. There are two kinds of spatial analysis, and we'll be focusing on the first kind in this talk, but both kinds are addressed in ASVML. And that is the situation of a field trial where the plots are on a regular grid, and what we're concerned to do is estimate, say, variety effects or treatment effects, and we're wanting to adjust for the spatial variation. Recognise the fact that the residuals are not independent, but plots that are closer together are likely to be more similar. Now, there's a paper in Jabes in 1997 which presents an approach of spatial analysis for a field trial where we show that with this technology you can begin fitting an autoregressive spatial structure and then discern also row effects and column effects, and there were actual explanations for the various patterns. In other words, the cultural practices involved in laying out the trial had their effects on the residuals. This form of analysis has taken off very much in Australia and in some other parts of the world as a basic standard analysis of field trials, and that has been helped and promoted strongly by the facility to do this within ASVML. The other kind of spatial analysis is where we have an irregular grid, some kind of survey, and we might then be interested in the pattern itself, interested in modelling the spatial pattern. This is sometimes called kriging, and ASVML has various facilities for that, including being able to fit Matern functions to the spatial pattern. But the main activity, I guess, and one of the key reasons for developing ASVML was to have a very efficient way of handling spatial analysis of field trials, and so we'll look at a single field trial, a fairly typical example that we have. Now, this example was a British example of a barley trial grown in 1976. It was a balanced incomplete block design. There were 25 varieties laid out in 6 replicates, but the field layout was 10 rows by 15 columns. It was a balanced incomplete block, and so each of the replicates were divided into 5 rows of 5 plots, a 5 by 5 arrangement, and the combinations in the various plots of 5 were balanced across the whole experiment. So with this layout, there are two forms of analysis that we can perform. We can do a block analysis, fitting the fixed effects as treatments, random effects for rep and block, and we can do the spatial analysis, which we fit an autoregressive error. Now, the essential difference between these two approaches is that one models the variation as a step function, and the other models the residual variation or the correlation as a continual process. And the separable autoregressive model, which has a different correlation in rows direction to in column direction, works well with field trials because the cultural practices associated with conducting the trial tend to be conducted in rows and in columns. So this generates the correlation in rows and in columns. Now, there is also moisture variation and so forth, which is not necessarily aligned with rows and columns, but often the dominant variation is aligned with rows and columns. The ASVML coding then for this example, we've got the title line, Slate Hall 1976 serial trial, and the data in shf.dat had a column for rep, coded 1 to 6, a column for lattice row, coded 1 to 30, a column for lattice column, coded 1 to 30, a column for field row, coded 1 to 10, a column for field column, coded 1 to 15, and the varieties, coded 1 to 25. We're scaling the yield by 100, just for the convenience of the analysis. will do various jobs, and so DoPart $1 enables us to specify which part we're going to run on the command line. Display 15 tells us to display all four of the spatial graphs that are available for this kind of spatial analysis. The qualifier spatial tells us to report that information also in the .res file. And the exclamation mark two-way tells us how to do the variogram, and the variogram of the residuals, which we'll discuss in a moment, allows for the fact that the correlations might be different in the various directions. The first part is a randomized complete block analysis. So for that job, we just say yield modeled as mean, variety, and random reps. Since it's balanced, it would be an equivalent analysis to, say, fixed reps. The second part is our balancing complete block analysis, where we fit mean and variety as fixed effects, rep, lattice row, and lattice column as the random effects. Or the spatial analysis in part 3, where we specify yield as mean and modeled as mean and variety, and this time I've included a predict var statement. We could have included that in all of these jobs, but the bit that it stands out is that we now specify an R structure. So the 1-2 line is the variance header line, and there's an implicit 1-2-0 saying that we have one set of data, we're analysing one experiment, but it is laid out in two directions, that is rows and columns, and the implicit zero there is that there are no other G-structures, or no G-structures being defined. Next, specify the row and the column correlation structure. This was indexed in the data with the variables field row, which was one of our variables in our data, and field column. The first time it's specified, it tells us the number of rows and the number of columns. So if the first field row could be replaced by a 10, and the field column could be replaced by a 15, so that name is simply just telling us how many levels in this factor, but it's convenient to specify it with the name of the factor rather than to have to work out what the exact levels are. They may change, in fact, in different circumstances. The second field, where we've repeated the name, is used for sorting, and this guarantees that the data is actually sorted into the same structure as we're putting the variance structure in. In other words, we could define the variance structure one way if we had that second field as zero, but the actual order that the residuals occurred could be quite different, and then the structure wouldn't fit at all well. The third field specifies the correlation model that we want, an AR1, that's an autoregressive with one parameter, lag1, and these plots are on a regular grid, so the correlation parameter is on the scale of the grid. Now, the grid is not the same in the two directions. In other words, the plots are not square, they're rectangular, so we need to allow a different correlation for rows than for columns. But you would then generally expect, although it doesn't always follow, that the correlation parameter in the narrow dimension will be higher than the correlation parameter in the long dimension of the plots. So the point one is an initial value for the correlation. That correlation, you know, can be negative or can be positive. Negative would imply some kind of competition between rows. It's unlikely in a field trial where we have plots, but it is highly likely in some other crops where you have a single row of plants, and then the next row of plants beside that is the next plot, and so competition from one variety might affect the neighbouring plot. The thing that stands out in this, as that coding is done there, that we haven't actually specified the residual variance, it's implicit and the analysis is done essentially on a gamma scale, although there's no variance parameters that need to be scaled by that, the residual variance is implicit in that model. When we come to multiple site versions of this, then we will need to specify the variance for each of these sections. Well, the fourth model that we fit here is a combination of the two, and this gives us a basis for comparing whether the spatial model, the autoregressive model, is better than the lattice row, lattice column, or whether they in fact both together contribute to the explanation of the variation. So now we have the random effects lat row and lat column added to the spatial model. Well, we can fit those four models and we get a series of log likelihoods from those models, and we can note the log likelihood for the randomised complete block analysis. It is -167. Just to comment that log likelihoods may be positive and may be negative. What we're looking for is an increase in the log likelihood to represent an improved model. And release 2 of ASReml has a automatic method of modulating the log likelihood so that if it is extremely large or extremely small, it will subtract off multiples of 10,000 to give a number that's of a moderate size. So in this case, the randomised complete block, which fits two variance parameters, the rep variance component and the residual variance component, has a log likelihood of -167. When we move to the balanced incomplete block design, then that log likelihood is increased dramatically by 35, so that the change -2 log likelihoods is 70, and the change in degrees of freedom is 2, so that's a very highly significant improvement. So there is definitely spatial variation going on. But what we find when we move to the third model, the spatial model, is that it is in fact even better, and it actually has used less parameters because the three parameters there were the row correlation, the column correlation, and the residual variance. And its log likelihood is -124. Now, it's not strictly nested in the randomised complete block analysis in that it doesn't include the block variation, but we can still do a comparison and see that this model indeed does fit a whole lot better. The log likelihoods are comparable, in other words. The basic requirement when comparing log likelihoods is that the fixed model not change between them. If there is a change in the fixed model, then you can't use the ReML log likelihood as printed in ASReML as a basis for comparing models. The final model, which puts the balanced incomplete block and the spatial together, shows a very small improvement from adding the balanced incomplete block terms, rep, lat row and lat column. It doesn't improve the likelihood at all for the extra 3 degrees of freedom. So in fact we conclude that the spatial model is more parsimonious, it fits the data better than the balanced incomplete block model. The components that we get out of that final model are shown in this next slide. The replicate variance has gone to the boundary. In other words, there's no replicate variance to explain when you've got the other terms in the model. The lattice row variation, there's some variation there. It is not large, and that's the extra bit that's explained. The log likelihood increase of 0.35 is due to some small lat row effects. Lat column has also gone to the boundary and has no contribution to the variation in the presence of the spatial parameters. The residual variance, 3.61. The residual order correlation in the row direction is 0.46, and in the column direction is 0.67. The columns are closer together than the rows, and so we see that the correlation parameter is higher across columns than it is across rows. Both of those correlation parameters are very high, indicating that there is quite a high spatial variation. Well, because we had the exclamation mark display 15, we get a series of graphics produced by ASRemel, unless you're running it on a machine that doesn't have the graphics incorporated. And the first one that we're looking at here is the variogram, and we asked for the variogram to be done as a two-way variogram. So we have a layout here of the two kind of directions overlaid on each other. Just to explain this picture a little bit, the outer dimension is the first one mentioned, so it is field row dimension. There were fewer of those than the inner dimension, which was the column dimension, and that is seen in this figure. The figure hasn't displayed the very highest order lag correlations because these have very little information on them, but it's displayed the low order correlations. So the variogram basically says what's the variance of difference between points lag zero apart, and of course that's a point with its, the difference of a point with itself is zero, so the lead point, the focal point there, will always be zero. And as we compare moving to the right from that point, we have the variance of points lag one apart, or moving another step, the variance of points lag two apart along from column to column. So that's along the row, there are 15 columns. And we see that as points get further apart, so the variance increases, and fairly strongly over a fairly wide period. Similarly, going in the other direction, the variance increases as the lag increases. And if we go off at a tangent to that, or at a diagonal position to that, the pattern isn't the same. It's slightly different depending on whether you go, say, northeast or northwest. The pattern that's on the margin essentially continues in the off-diagonal direction as well. Now, there's a certain amount of skill involved in looking at variograms to see if there is something that else should be modelled, and one of the things that stands out is that if the variogram has a very jagged sawtooth appearance, that could suggest that adjacent rows might have a high difference, but two apart might have a low difference, and that suggests that there is something going on in the cultural practices that has affected the variance. So we look for patterns in that to suggest that maybe we need to fit other terms in our model. In this case, the shape is fairly well defined, and we are happy with that variogram. One of the other plots that ASRemel produces is a field plan representation of the residuals, and that's what we have here. So if we take the residual at each point and do a little plot showing whether it's high or low relative to a central line, we can get a series of 10 lines, because there are 10 rows, and there are 15 columns. So this is a representation of the residuals laid out in a way that we can look for possible patterns in the residuals. Now, on the edges of this, we have diamonds which show the mean, the highest and the lowest residual in the respective row or column. And so this will show us any overall pattern that's associated with rows or columns. And if there is an outstanding residual, a high residual, then it will be associated with a particularly large diamond in the margin, pointing to the fact that there is a particularly high or particularly low residual in that row and in that column. The third figure that we have here is similar kind of display, a separate figure for the rows and for the columns, showing the residuals and plotting the residuals within that row and within that column. So it's an alternative presentation of what is obtained in the diamonds from the previous figure. And it shows again if there is any particular pattern in the rows and columns, or whether there are any particular outliers in the rows and columns. In this particular case, the residuals are reasonably well behaved given this correlation structure. The fourth figure that will be displayed is a histogram of the residuals, and well, I haven't displayed that in this presentation. Well, that's a spatial analysis. If you want a thorough discussion of those things, then I'd refer you to the paper in Jabes, Gilmore et al, 1997. Next thing that we're just going to mention here is that when we come to, say, forest genetic trials, it's common that the trees aren't in a complete rectangular grid. And this typically means adding a lot of dummy points to fill out the grid. Or alternatively, we might actually use the grid reference type approach to those kind of trials. When we're fitting a tree model for forest genetic trials, that is a genetic effect for each individual tree, then we need to ensure that we also fit a residual variance associated with that. And we need to have the spatial, a separate spatial variation. What we've written here is either the nugget is a residual and spatial is in G, or spatial is a residual and nugget is in G. In other words, the model can be fitted in different ways when we have what's called a nugget variance. That is, to have a correlation structure and then a separate independent variance structure. General comment is that the spatial model frequently is superior to the design model for growth and production traits. It's less so for disease and conformation traits. Now, there's interest in using these spatial models for microarray analyses, and several papers have been written on that as well, and I refer you to the literature for that. So I suggest that you explore one of these analyses, run these analyses yourselves. There's examples on the file for you to trial these analyses.